everybody, and welcome back to Make It Sound Fiction. We are an awesome podcast that looks at pop culture media and narrative and all the sorts of things that we watch and listen to all the time, and we talk about it. And I am one of your hosts, Nico, otherwise known as Apple Cider, and I am here joined by my other co-host,
Tyler. I still don't have a name. I just have Tyler. Wait. Robowitch said I'm Autocross Pop.
Oh, okay. That's the new hotness. It's the new brand. I'm digging it.
It just feels so lame to just be like, well, Tyler, I'm not apple cider. I'm not lemonade.
I know. It's hard being around somebody who's such a tastemaker like me, who just constantly has the brand going, you know, but...
Yeah,
we'll get you there someday, Tyler. We'll get right into it because we have a few things to talk about, because there a lot of stuff happened this week in games and otherwise.
A game,
yeah. Which let's be clear, a game. But maybe before we got into all that, we kind of wanted to circle back around to something that we kind of got into a discussion about off the podcast, because I'm currently, or I just finished writing a piece about queer people in video games and queer, like, coming of age stories and growing up and stuff like that. And one of the side conversations that we had was one of the reasons that I think that we see a lot of coming-of-age stories in queer relationships and things like that in games is just because we just don't see a lot of video games where people are friends, and in particular, women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of games where you either get, like, one woman or something, or it's, like, they're there, but they're usually, like, maybe, like, characters you talk to or something, but not necessarily, like, characters that interact with other women, so it's not... Like, you don't usually have a lot of, like, friendships usually going on. I mean, I always imagine, like, Mass Effect 2, which is a game that has a lot of, like, characters on a ship. So you do get a little bit of that. But it's usually never, like, and that was, like, a unique thing about that game. It's never, like, a common thing for most games. Like, because we were sitting there trying to think of, or at least I was, trying to think of the games I had played that have, like, two women that are friends that aren't just, like, you know, like, comrades or something, right? So
yeah.
And I couldn't think of anything other than the recent Uncharted game, Lost Legacy, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
That's a game where there's two women. I mean, but that's also the unique thing about it. So it's like, it's never just a normal thing at all, and it doesn't, and even then it's very rarely a thing in a game, just in general, and in games in general. So it's really weird because you'd think that there'd be, I don't know, because you even have, like, games like Tomb Raider, where it's, like, led by a woman, obviously, and she still doesn't, like, have any friends.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things that's not, because when we talk a lot about fictional stories, and particularly with video games, I feel like there's some things that are definitely tropes that are so, like, kind of well-worn, like the, like, kill your gaze thing, like, that definitely comes around because queer stories are not allowed to be happy or allowed to not resolve themselves in, like, this, like, really brutal way. But I feel like the, like, women not being friends in video games, or even just people not having friends in video games, is this weird side symptom of the fact that games, even narrative ones, are so focused around this, like, singular hero principle.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I feel like it's an offshoot of, like, a couple of different things, because even games where, like, men are the focal point, well, there's another whole subset of, like, not having friends is because men are also not allowed to have friends.
Yeah.
Because men are not allowed to be intimate with anybody in video games. But, yeah, it feels like it's this intersection of, like, a couple different things, like, relationships are extra work outside of, like, you know, BioWare games that are specifically designed for you to...
That's like a feature.
It's a feature. It's a feature of it.
It's a feature.
And then you have that women are not allowed to be on the box and be in multiples. You're not allowed to have multiple women in it.
Yeah.
And then the, like, protagonist thing, too. It feels like so many games are just geared around you being this, like, solo, solitary person who, like, yeah, you can work with a team or you have buddies and stuff like that, but it still feels like they're kind of, like, they're also mechanical functions. Like, do you play a lot of games where, like, you feel like you're even given time to be friends with somebody?
Yeah, there's not a lot of...
like, your squad or whatever?
Right. Because it's a lot of, like...
more, like, single-person games than I have.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of those games are about, like... A lot of those games are about, like, saving the world or you're the chosen one or whatever, and it's, like, everyone is either, like, in awe of you or something, or, like... It's, like, still always about you in a way that means that, oh, that they didn't do a lot of writing about, like, your relationship with this person you met for this side quest or even for, like, a main quest that's, like, helping you because it's really just about you. Because I was thinking, like, Mass Effect is, the one I keep going back to is Mass Effect, but Mass Effect has, like, lots of different characters, obviously. But even then, it doesn't seem like a lot of effort went into, I mean, I'm sure effort went into, like, writing those, like, relationships, but they always just end up being... Like we said, a feature. Like, it's like, oh, I want to, like, become friends with them and not be on their bad side so I can do their, like, loyalty quest or whatever. Like, it's always, like, a mechanical thing. The other thing that is, I don't know if it's driven by, like, resources, because it's weird, because, like, a lot of games are, like, okay, look at the E3 podcast we did and how we were mentioning, I think we mentioned this, where, like, a lot of the replacement for, like, characters is just going to be other real players. Because, like, I think it was Todd Howard that said, like, we always have, like, really interesting characters in our games. But what if, like, they were just other players and you have your real buddies? And it's,
yeah,
like, that's not... That doesn't really... That's not a replacement for, like, having written relationships and stuff like that. Like, that's what characters are. And I think a lot of games are, like... I think that decision to just be, like... Or that mentality... of, oh, we can just replace characters with people because people just want to hang out with each other, that seems like to misunderstand, like, what the power of, like, actually writing characters is, and that games don't super value that.
Yeah.
If they're willing to give it up that quickly.
That makes a lot of sense to me, because it feels like that's extra money you have to spend on, like, writers to just develop a relationship, which seems like... If it's not a romantic end goal, just doesn't feel important to developers in general.
Which is really sad, because that's how, like, stories work. Like, that's how you give, like, motivation to characters, and that's how you make it your world, like, interesting. You show, like, these kind of, like, different relationships that sort of maybe, like, reflect on what's the world's like. And so, yeah. There's so much there that's how, like, stories work, and games are just like, eh, that's a lot of work. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, which is... God, that makes me feel so depressed that, like, friendships either have to be a mechanical function of, like, reputation or loyalty or some sort of, like, in-game mechanic, or else they're just not there.
Yeah, or they're, like, super, super, super written in a way that is just, like, for a purpose, not for, like, whatever.
I also don't find my experience with some of even the BioWare stuff also bothered me a lot, too.
They're not great.
They're not well written in a lot of ways. Like, and I know that there's people that are going to come for me on this one, but, like, I felt the jump from, like, and I know this, I think, gets better by the time you get to, like, Mass Effect 3 and, like, Dragon Age 7 or whatever we're on now.
I mean, because of time spent, not necessarily because it was written elegantly.
Well, I think, I mean, like, I, God, I'm not going to go down that hole. We already pissed off Bethesda fans. We're not going to piss off BioWare fans this week. But, like, I think in a lot of ways, some of the dialogue choices and stuff are so stilted, and I don't like them in, like, Mass Effect. And you just make the jump from, like, weird flirting to sex, like, immediately, and it's, like, so awkward. But it's, it's so different to me as somebody who predominantly watches, like, a lot of television and movies.
Yeah, because that's, like, what they have to work with.
Yeah, relationships are, like, huge, pivotal, impactful things for the purpose of, like, can really make or break the flow of a story. Like, I just got done watching season 2 of Luke Cage. I won't spoil anything. But relationships are, like, 100% of the motivation for everything that happens in that plot. And not just friendships, either. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, video games can't even do a basic thing like romance or friendship, right? So how is it supposed to, you know, how is it supposed to represent the, like, breadth of, like, relationships with a capital R that are out there?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because, like...
It seems, it, like, when stuff's, like, more nuanced than just, I want to fuck this person, I like this person. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like... I won't spoil, I guess, Avengers, the new one, but, like, I feel like the ending of that even shows, like, that weird disconnect of, like, clearly there are relationships or, like, friendships that mean a lot, but they use the ending as, like, just, like, a plot point or a bunch of plot points, and there are moments in there where it's like, oh, that would have been more impactful because I do care about these characters, but it doesn't work out because... like, it's clearly here just for, like, a plot point. And the other thing is I wanted to say that, like, there are games, obviously, that do this well. Like, okay, Butterfly Soup. That's, like, yes. A game just about friendships, and it does it incredibly well. And, it like, a lot of the stuff in that game pivots on the friendships, because you're like, oh, no, what is this person going to think or whatever? And it's because you care, because they're written well. So, yeah. I mean, there's games like that that do, and obviously it's a small game. I was trying to think of, like, a bigger game that has that. I mean, to an extent, yeah, the BioWare games do have, like, interesting moments based on friendships and stuff, but just generally it's not a huge thing in games.
Yeah, and it's, you could even, and as much as I love Butterfly Soup, you could even argue that smaller games or games like light novels or, you know, games of that nature, like Sims in general, like that, could also argue that that friendship is still a function of mechanical stuff. Now, in dating sims, it definitely is. It 100% is. I think Butterfly Soup is a little bit of a different argument because all of those characters have friendships with each other when it seems like the main... That game is so different because I wouldn't call that a dating sim in the slightest, because you're not choosing between people. It's, you're kind of like working through a story with some interactive choices, so it's like an interactive novel. But, like, those are the only games where I felt like there really was, like, that time and effort put into it.
Yeah.
Versus it being like an end game of sorts. And that's one of the reasons why I can't really get into, like, dating sims, is it feels so, like,
goal focused.
Yeah,
like, not a relationship, not a friendship, just like, oh, I just want to date you.
Yeah, like, I like this one.
Yeah,
I like this one. I'm gonna make it happen.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make it happen. So it's like, and that's so weird. That's the one weird thing about games, is like, I really wish more of them did have that writing that really did put emphasis on the ways that people interact with each other, but is part of the narrative and part of the, like, fabric of the world.
I would argue that the reason a lot of people don't like escort missions and stuff is because you never care about the thing you're escorting. True. Like, I mean, not that mechanically they're good, but, like, almost every one I've ever done, I never care about the thing I'm trying to, or the person I'm trying to help. Like, if you actually cared about them, it could be a different story, you know?
On the other
hand, I think that's an example of, like, where games, like, fail.
Yeah. On the other hand, I'll be honest here. Friends don't make friends with people that are walking at twice walking speed, but not run speed.
Or, like, in WoW, where they, like, go, they run full speed forward to attack the enemies and then run back and then continue walking. Run backwards and then continue walking. What the heck, Blizzard?
I've done so many escort quests where the escort NPC is faster than walking, so you can't do, like, the auto walk, but you're not fast enough to run, so you can't auto run. Like,
right. I just hate that they go back to where they ended, where they started the combat, and then continue walking. It's gotta be, like, a pathing thing. Whatever. I don't know. Yes.
Friendship.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because it is such a fundamental part of our lives, and drama and comedy even. It's such a fundamental part of storytelling, like you said.
Yeah.
That it's one of those things that games really hasn't wholesale adopted as part of its, like, ethos, I guess. I don't know if that's the right
word. Which is weird because it feels really untapped in terms of just like storytelling, because there's just so much you could do. Like, there's so many like big moments in games that could just not be about like a building exploding. They could be about somebody like doing the wrong thing or turning on you, or I mean, obviously I guess there's stuff like that, but there's big stuff you could do.
Do you think that's kind of a bigger issue with the fact that like games as an interactive medium means it still drifts so far away from like what we think of as, you know, the classic ideas of like storytelling and narrative, like in film or TV or books?
Yeah, I was thinking just now that a lot of it, I think, is really like we were saying, is like it's all, a lot of games just have like this weird like mechanical and narrative assumption that you are everything and everything should be like initiated by you. And in that way, it like has like this innate power that you have. So I think that's even why, like in a dating sim, you're like, I choose this one, because you're allowed to. You're like, you like downloaded the game knowing like, okay, I get to pick one of these. And like, I feel like that makes it to where a lot of the writing is like, well, we gotta like let the player know that they still do have control and they can choose like what they want. So if they don't really like this person, then we're not gonna like make them like be in a like friendship with them. And so I think a lot of the like even the design and writing goes in that way, because it's just like that nobody wants to like make the player feel not like all powerful or not like, you know, able to do whatever they want. I guess. I don't know. And I don't know if I think that makes games different than film, I guess, but it also means I mean, there are definitely games where you don't have to do that. So it's like, I think it's just a big assumption that a lot of people make that we don't have to all the time, because it's okay to make people learn to like somebody. There's tons of characters in like TV shows and film where I don't know if I like this person and I grow to like them.
Yeah.
Like, even like Stranger Things, I grew to like Steve.
Yeah,
I didn't like Steve
in
the first season.
They gave him time to become sympathetic.
Yeah.
They gave people,
and you can do
time
that,
to be characters and to kind of have their own lives that have an exteriority that aren't 100% impacted by you, the singular protagonist.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think is one of the problems about
right
video games, is that when you center the main character on the player so much because you have to sell them on this like big experience as a player and the like interactivity that they bring to the space, I think it really destroys a lot of the like organic ability to tell a story about other people that aren't you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a depressing conversation about games.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, that's the sort of stuff that we think about, because I think it's one of the reasons why I still have so much trouble getting into a lot of games, is because while, yes, I love that fantasy of feeling like the main character and feeling like the hero and having the impact on the story, oh man, I love it when two people fall in love, or like,
yeah,
you know, that sense in movies and TV shows where you're at a remove and you're invested in the characters because you yourself are not a character, so you don't have to think about yourself and you're not participating in it. It means you can just kind of get really caught up in that like drama.
Yeah. All of it, you don't have to worry about like fulfilling anything. You're just there to see it in a way.
Yeah. You're just there to feel feelings about it. I wish more games at least tried a little bit to make
me. Yeah. Because all of this stuff you can do with a normal game about, like, even like a game about like shooting, you could do this stuff. Like, it doesn't have to be just like Butterfly Soup, where it's just like a narrative game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Speaking of shooting games, we should probably talk about the hamster ball in the room.
Yeah, did we? Well, the hamster ball.
We'll,
we also have
we'll
Symmetra,
get to that.
But yeah.
So why don't you take us into this one?
Okay, you can see our live reactions on Apple's Apple stream. But so they were teasing a hero we talked about last week on Play Overwatch's like Twitter, and we thought it was like going to be like the Junker Queen, because that's a character that's been in the Junkertown map and stuff like that. But they showed like a ball rolling through like I think one of the maps, and nobody knew what it was. Everyone was wondering, like, is it Hammond, this like gorilla from the same place as Winston? But it ended up being a hamster and a mech, like in a tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. With like two giant guns, and he is a tank. His name is Hammond. I get. Well, he's called Wrecking Ball in the game, but his name is like Hammond, right?
Yeah,
I
think the hamster is Hammond. Wrecking Ball is the AI and the big metal ball.
I didn't know that was the. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. So it's a little hamster in a mech, and it's an animal, which we already talked about not wanting an animal, and it's like a kind of really basic, like, animal. Like, it's like, oh, a hamster in a big mech. Like, that's really unique. No other game has that, which a lot of games have that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, we were really disappointed. Like, you can hear us in the Twitch stream. Like, we were just like why a hamster? Like, why an animal that is just like, oh, it's like a cute little hamster that has a robot that talks for him, and he has two guns, and he can, like, turn into a ball and roll around and, like, attach to a wall and, like, fling himself up in the air and, like, land on people. It's just, like, it's hard to get excited about the character, because I think we both wanted a tank hero, because the game's a little bit in need of another tank.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get excited about any of that when it's, like, just, like, everyone's really psyched about an awesome hamster in a mech. Like, it's just not that especially... I don't know. This is the thing I was telling you that I think after the stream of, like, they even were doing, like, okay, so D.Va is another character in the game, and she has, like, a mech as well. And she has, like, a highlight intro where she's, like, laying on the back of her mech and, like, doing, like, a peace sign and blowing a bubble gum. And, like, the Hammond also has, like, an intro, exactly the same thing. And I don't know. To me, that's just, like, it's really not creative to just, like, copy your own game in that way. I get that it's sort of, like, cute or funny that, like, oh, it's, like, he has a mech too, so he's doing the same thing. But I feel like that's, like, a good example of, like, why Hammond is just, like, not a very creative character, because it's just taking from... One, it's taking from, like, the same ideas they've already came up with D.Va, and D.Va was a really unique kind of cool idea of, like, a gamer, but that was, like, in... like a really pro gamer that is in, like, a mech that can actually control this, that is, like, really, you know, like, powerful because of how good she is. And have, like, a hamster that's in a mech that is just, like, nothing really original, and it doesn't really sell you on anything. Like, this is the thing, is, like, a lot of the older characters that were unique, they really sold you on why they were cool. They didn't just make them to be, like, to look visually cool or, like, visually interesting. Because obviously, I guess the big thing about a hamster in a mech, right, is that, like, oh, it's a little, like, squeaking hamster that's in this big mech that does, like, a lot of damage, and that's, like, they two contrast each other, so it's, like, interesting.
Yeah.
I guess that's, like, the really basic, like, reductive look at that. And but, like, think about, like, Anna. Like, Anna was, like, a sniper healer. And she's, like, an older woman, and, like, you maybe on paper you'd be like, well, I don't understand what's so great about that. But, like, when you play her, it's like, oh, this is really cool, and she's really cool. Anna's a really cool character.
And you, like, get enveloped. You get enveloped in that character concept, because you're like, I'm Sniper Grandma. I'm this older woman.
And, like,
woman.
She has, like, attitude, and, like, she's kind of dorky because she's, like, you know, like, there's just a lot
going
on. The
oldest person.
Yeah.
She has a lot of history with everybody.
She has a ton of history.
Yeah.
And, like, she has, like, that, like, you know, like, I'm not going to put up with this kind of attitude. And, like, there's so much character in Anna, and it's another, and I brought up Anna because she's a rare, like, you don't get a lot of, like, older women in games.
You really
and you
don't.
Wrote about
you
this.
Really don't. Yeah.
And, like, also, you don't get a sniper healer. So it's, like, there's so much there that you can kind of learn from playing her. Same thing with even, like, Zarya, who's, like, another tank in the game, and she has the ability to, like, bubble people and gain energy from it, which makes her do more damage. And a character like that you might not completely understand, but, like, she's, like, a weightlifter-like woman that you can play, and she's, like, super strong and, like, really impactful in the game, and it feels so good to play her, and it's so... You're just completely sold on having that, like, really diverse character in the game. And then Hammond just, to me, doesn't seem to... I mean, I haven't really super played him, I guess, but it just doesn't have that, like, allure to it to me. Like, there's nothing really super interesting about Hammond. It's just like, oh, it's kind of cute or awesome that it's, like, a mech with a hamster in it. That's it. Like, it seems like it stops there.
But Tyler, what about that hamster representation?
Yeah, hamsters. There's not enough cute, furry things in games.
Yeah, like, I just don't care. Like, I just don't
Because I just
care.
Feel like they could have had, like, a black woman that was, like, you know, the ones, like, we've seen in earlier, like, was it in the recall short?
Okay. Recall short. Yeah,
like, imagine
several.
One of those characters, and yeah, I guess not everybody might not be psyched about just the existence of a character like that in the game, But then you start playing her, and if the, you know, Blizzard has the ability to design really unique heroes, and then you'd be like really sold on like why she's so cool and why she needs to be in this game. And yeah. I just haven't really ever felt that with Hammond. Even though, like, I think his abilities are neat, I just don't think he's...
He could have been anybody else.
He could have been anybody else. And he could have been anybody else, and they've never cared about what type of characters they have in the game that much. Like, they have a lot of different ones. And
who don't even have as much story yet.
Yeah.
Like, Hammond has more story in the game right now because of like the new revamp to Horizon Lunar Colony in like environmental stuff and story, like, then like Zenyatta or even Lucio. Like,
yeah, even Lucio. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
Lucio got like a voice line recently, and that's it. And everyone's like clamoring onto that because, you know, we don't have anything else.
Because we're like, oh God, his father used to work for Vishkar. Oh my God, there's so much irony there. And then it's like, oh no, we got a hamster. And it's like, Blizzard was like, well, we can't do a jetpack cat because that's too ridiculous. They definitely put a hamster in a fucking metal ball.
And it has like a vague connection to Winston, so maybe they think it's okay because it has like some lore, but like...
I don't care. Like, yeah. I have never been this uninterested in a character that Blizzard has come out with in a, like, this has never happened. Like, even when Doomfist came out, I was at least interested in like his story because he was in like the comics.
He's a pretty big character in the
story. He's a very big character in the story. Like, he made a very big impact.
Yeah. He's also, but like, and then on top of that, it's like, he's also like really kind of mechanically interesting too. I mean, it's a character that's like melee in a shooter game, and like he has the ability to like punch you and displace you around. Like, there's really cool ideas there, and also it's like he's Doomfist, and like you don't get a lot of characters like Doomfist in games either. So it's like, I just wish that like Hammond was just anything else, because you could even have somebody in a mech again that isn't a hamster, I guess. And
I'm gonna correct you for just one second, because Doomfist definitely is an archetype that's in a lot of different characters, specifically fighting games. Big black dude, bald, you know, with a giant fist of some sort. Yeah, no, I mean,
I guess I forgot about that. That is definitely a thing, but yeah.
But at least Blizzard did something slightly different with him, because he does, the way he does hook into the larger story.
He is a big character in the story, so.
Yeah, and has kind of his own... I don't agree with his ideology, and I think it's a little bit fucking weird considering weird. The like whole thing with Omnix, but like he's at least still a fully fleshed character. He's a person. He's so much more relatable, whereas I feel like relating to a hamster that doesn't even talk, on like Winston, who's sapient in like a vocalization sort of way and like a, you know, humanoid sort of way, is relatable because, you know, he has thoughts and feelings and vocalizes them and that sort of thing, and it's like, like, we relate to an ape more, gorilla, because they're like, he has feelings, whereas like I feel like the hamster, what's a hamster really gonna do for you in terms of like feelings?
It feels like comedic relief. It feels like just like a joke.
Yeah.
But like a joke that is like, oh, it's really funny, and so you'll, whenever you see him on your team, you're gonna be like, that's so cool, and it's so whatever to me, because so much of the other character, all of the other characters, I would say, don't have that. They never feel like, even Torb, who is like, you know, like a guy who has like a turret and doesn't really do anything. Like, he doesn't have like an incredible lore. Obviously, he is a big part of Overwatch 2. Even he isn't just like comedic relief when he's with you. Like, he has his own like cool voice lines with people. Like, I don't really like Torb that much, but like, he's more interesting than Hammond to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For sure. Because he's not a fucking hamster.
Yeah.
He's like, not, I like, just, that's,
there's like no future for Hammond really either. Like, there's just nothing you could ever really do with him. I mean, I guess you could write anything, but there's just nothing really about Hammond that is compelling.
Other than it's funny. A lot of people were making jokes about, like, you know, shippers and stuff like that. And that's actually the part that I think is really fascinating, because it's like, no, you can't ship a hamster with anybody.
Yeah.
And that sounds gross, and it's true, because it's gross. But it's also saying a lot of things about what people invest themselves in the game, is making up the stories to fill in the gaps that Blizzard has not filled in, which is a big deficit to them. But it's also why the fans love the game, is that, like, yeah, all the little story bits that Blizzard sprinkles into their games keep you kind of hooked on to, like, do the other stuff, to do the fan stuff, the fan art, the fan writing, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hammond is a meme.
Hammond really is, yeah.
He's a meme. He is.
And that hurts the game, because I think what you just said, like, it sells you on, like, what people want to, like, create their own stories with. It also sells you just on playing the game and playing that character, because, like, it's cool to be, like we said with Anna, like, she's, like, a, like, you know, she's been in, like, wars or a war, and, like, she's, like, been, like, you kind of, like, rogue and, like, undercover or whatever. And that's cool to play, like, a healer like that. Or even, like, Mercy, you get to play, like, a brilliant, like, scientist. But, like, Hammond is just, like, the only thing they're going for Hammond is just, like, that he's cute. That's it.
Joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke. And it feels like World of Warcraft's writing. When they
it does. That's a good point.
When they insert a Leroy Jenkins joke in 2018.
Yeah.
Like, it's a joke, and the novelty is going to wear off, and you don't want people to wear off the novelty of your characters in a game where there's only so many of them. And I'm really upset if this is the direction that hero creation is going to come to, where they just release a new hero every couple of months. That's to, like, grab the attention of people for a really limited time, but then we live with it.
Yeah, they could do this, because I mean, I don't play League, but I know that, like, they don't release a ton of new heroes, but they have a lot of heroes right now, and there is, like, I feel like there is a little bit of, like, oh, this one's just kind of cool because when we announced her, like, it's cool to have, like, a lady with, like big knives or something. You know what I mean? Like, it feels very, like, oh, this is a neat idea that we had for this time. And then now that we're years past that, it's like there's so many characters that a lot of them aren't very great anymore, or a lot of them just haven't gotten any attention, and they're just there, and they're not interesting. And I think a lot of League players have accepted that. Like, when they look at, like, League, they might go, like, okay, well, obviously nobody plays this character, and, like, they're old and nobody cares about them. But for Overwatch, it started out as something really tight-knit and also had a lot of characters that had a lot of story and, like, interactions. And now it's getting so big, and we're getting characters like Hammond that don't have much connection, and the connection isn't good, and it's just making it kind of bland. It's making the character roster bland, and that's really sad, because I thought Overwatch was, like, I thought a big point of Overwatch from Blizzard was, we want our characters to be really unique and really compelling.
And meaningful.
And meaningful, and we're not going to have a million of them, because you want to care about everyone. We want you to care about them, because they're all going to be interesting and cool and fun to play. But now it's getting so big, and now with Hammond, it's so bland that it's like, is that gone? Is that philosophy gone? I don't know.
It kind of feels like we're kind of going down that path.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
Because that's, and I guess the other thing where we can make it clear, that philosophy would go away if you wanted to make money, because it's very much a business idea to just keep releasing heroes.
Yeah, and to keep releasing stuff that's going to generate a lot of, like, immediate
interest.
Yeah, because
Overwatch, we don't pay for these heroes. Like, in League, you do pay for champions. Like, in Overwatch, you don't. So if they want to get more people to play, I mean, I guess they keep adding more characters with more stuff to get in loot boxes, and you can buy loot boxes.
Here's the thing, I actually have zero interest in, like, whatever his skins are or whatever they look like, because he's a fucking hamster. I'm gonna keep saying that. He's a fucking hamster.
Yep.
And not a person, so I don't care. And the thing is that, like, even when everybody is sick of, like, their fucking hamster dance jokes or their Hamtaro fucking things or the dramatic groundhog or whatever the fuck, he's still a character that we have to now play against and balance against in this fucking game. And the first time that I get smacked around is Mercy by a fucking hamster, like, I'm gonna want to quit. Like, I'm just,
and he will too.
I will. And that's the thing, is, like, this is a choice that Blizzard is going to make us fucking live with for the duration of this fucking game, is a fucking hamster. And I'm mad about it.
Yeah, it's really disappointing.
We could Queen. We call him a Junker Queen.
And Junker Queen wouldn't even. I'd still have issues with Junker Queen,
exactly. You know, because like that also seemed like a direction of like putting in another ostensibly white woman into the game. But you know what? It would have been a human being versus a fucking hamster. I can at least work with a fucking human versus a fucking hamster.
Yeah.
This is just like. I have been, like, there is an absence of, like, feelings of this. Like, there's a hole where my feelings should be about this character because I just don't care. Like, I have never been so uninterested in something that Blizzard put into Overwatch, ever. Like, this is...
Like, if you, it's so, I think it says a lot that you could imagine Hammond right now and then imagine it's, like, April 1st and like, just know that it's, like, they're April Fools for the new hero in Overwatch. Like, haha. But it is a hero. And I guess technically people had that issue with like Pandaria, like Pandarans, but
Pandaren, but they had like, a story built around.
They had a story and everything. So they like really committed to that, making that a
they
thing.
They committed but to that. Hammond, they committed.
There's no, I don't think the committal is like as strong. Like, I don't think it still just feels like they thought it was cool and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's a larger thing. I don't want to get into the podcast because that's a whole thing. But the idea of just making things in Overwatch because they're cool is like really hurting the game. And it's been more than Hammond. Like
it's been more than Hammond. Yeah. It's been, you know,
Diva Rockets. They think Valkyrie is really cool because you can fly. Like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For Mercy, that's her ultimate. Yeah. So yeah.
Oh, infinite. Sombra teleporter.
Yeah, infinite
too.
Sombra like, teleporter and infinite Sombra stealth. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of the stuff happening in the game right now that just feels like somebody thought it was cool and they're really trying to come up with a change and they don't understand how it actually affects the game, and especially when it doesn't, how it affects normal players, not pro players, not Overwatch League players. And that's a big issue right now.
Speaking of which, some Symmetra changes. How do we feel about those?
They're really weird. So one thing that really kind of changed my perspective on the Symmetra changes is like recently on a live stream with like Siegel. Was it Mercer?
Maybe.
Scott Mercer? I think it was Scott Mercer.
You watched it.
Yeah, I was trying to think. It was either Scott Mercer or Jeff Goodman, they're designers on the game and on Overwatch, obviously. And I think one of them said, I think it was Mercer, that they did the changes, essentially, they did the changes to Symmetra because they never saw her play in Overwatch League. Yeah. Like, in Overwatch League, I think it's always been, like, it's not like a joke, right? Like, people bring signs that say, like, play Symmetra, you cowards. Because Symmetra just hasn't been that useful to Overwatch League players, and that's the whole thing, too. It's like, pro players have specific, like, combinations of heroes that they play because they're efficient, and they're, like, that's how they... like work together, they've scrimmed that, you know, off of the actual games. So, and I guess that philosophy to design a character so that pro players appreciate her is bad because normal games don't function like pro games. They just don't. Like, people don't work together that much. Yes, it's a team game, but people don't like talk to each other on voice chat and like tell you exactly when ultimates are coming up or where enemies are positioned. That's not a thing. And a lot of Symmetra's new design feels like that. And so Symmetra basically, like, I guess just to go over it, like, she has her teleporter used to be her ultimate ability, which would let people come from spawn and just go right back to the point or wherever you put the teleporter. Now it's an E ability, so it's a normal ability. I guess on console.
Short,
I don't know what the button is on console, but yeah.
It's a way shorter cooldown. It's
a short cooldown.
It's a short cooldown. It's a short cooldown.
Yeah, so you basically.
Ability. Yeah.
Yeah, you drop it. You put it out like a Maywall, so it means you just get. You like put it out in front of you somewhere, or even on high ground. You can put it up like vertically. And then it puts a turret or a teleporter where you placed it, where you selected, and then also where you're standing, where the Symmetra is standing. And then you can walk back and forth through it using a new interact key. So basically, you just put a teleporter and go up to high ground, or put a teleporter and go behind you, or go forward, or dodge an ult, or leave a graviton surge. Like, you can do teleporters all the time. And so that opens up, like, huge possibilities, because, like, there's a ton of play. Like, your team can go through it, by the way, like, not just you. So, like, everybody could, like, go through it and go to some, like, high ground and kill a Widowmaker or whatever. Like, everybody can do stuff. The other thing is, like, she has, like, her prime or secondary fire is, like, big orbs, and those do more damage.
Yeah, fast orbs.
Yeah, they're faster, they do more damage, and they have, like, splash damage, like Pharaoh rockets. And then her left click, which are her primary fire, is, like, a beam. It doesn't lock on anymore, and now you have to aim it like a Zarya beam, so it does require aim, and it charges up faster. And it's, like, shorter range, effectively, because it doesn't latch onto people or lock onto people. And I guess, and her ultimate is a giant, like, barrier wall that, like, actually giant. It covers the entire map. Yeah. It's a giant. It looks really cool. Yeah.
Skybox to ground. Like,
yeah. Like, you look up and it's just this giant wall in front of you that's, like, glowing. Yeah. And people, so the enemy team has to, like, destroy it or walk through it. You can walk through it. It's not like a wall you can't walk through, but, so I guess the thing to say is that, like, the teleporter is really potentially cool. Because there's a lot of huge plays you could do with it. Like, there's a lot of maps where there's a point in front of you after a choke point, and, like, the first point to capture, and you could go completely around to the side. Like, your whole team could, like, go through a teleporter and flank and get to the point. And that's, like, huge. You can never do that before. There are some, like, Ana can't, like, jump across big gaps. She only has a normal jump. She has no mobility. So now characters without mobility can use the teleporter to have, like, incredible mobility, right?
I like that a lot. Like, I've actually, I was playing with her the other day on Hanamura Point 2, and I got our Ana up to the Widow Sniper Perch that's overlooking the second point with me.
Yeah, that's cool. So the issue is not everybody's going to do that. Not everybody knows. Not everybody's going to take your teleporter. And I'm not saying this, like, theoretically. People don't take your teleporters.
They don't. Yeah. Because a lot of times I also don't know where it's going.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because it's, like, pretty short range and it's only in a straight line that you can lay it out. So it has to be a straight line from where you can see visually.
Yeah.
And that's one of the drawbacks to it that I'm actually not liking, and it's making it very hard to use, is you have to have time to visually line that up, so you can't do it in the middle of battle.
And she kind of casts it out, sort of. Like, yeah, she has to build it, sort of.
She has to build it, so it actually makes it... It always has to be, like, a preparatory thing, like a prepared sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or it has to be when you're already holding a point, which means that she... It's not good if you're going to play Symmetra on, like, a control map at all, unless it's to get... You already hold the point.
Yeah.
And so it's, like... It's still awkward and clunky to use, whereas I wish you could do a separate, like, set. Like, I wish you could just set it down somewhere and then set down the other one somewhere. Like, I don't know. That would probably be, like, game-breaking.
Yeah.
And I understand that, but, like,
it's really one of those clunky things where they clearly thought, like, how could we make her way more, like, open to, like, really smart big plays? And that's it. The TP being on a cooldown, not an ultimate, means that, like, you can do tons of stuff with her. And even in that interview with Siegel, he said, like, his team, Dallas Fuel, could see them using it, like, right out of the spawn on the first attack, and, like, use it to have the entire team go somewhere that they couldn't get to without using a bunch of cooldowns.
Like high ground.
Like high ground.
On, like, Numbani.
Because usually, like as he explained, usually they would, like, carefully use, like, Winston's leap onto the high ground and then have, like, a D.Va fly up there, and then Matrix as the rest of the team walks up there, and then they wait for the cooldowns, and they go to the other side, then they go down, you know what I mean? And then Symmetra, you just put a TP and everyone goes through it, and then you go to the point.
Like, yeah, I can see that being King's Row Point 1 breakers off the bat.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge to get an entire team up there. And because you could do it from relative safety.
Yeah, now the Bastion Strat might work on King's Row. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's, like, it's interesting, and I definitely can see how it's going to get set up for coordinated team play in Overwatch League. But as I found it, as a Symmetra player, somebody who does have quite a few hours in Symmetra, I found the change to the character to be... It kind of stole some of her character away, which is weird because it loses focus. And it was, I don't know. It's like a little bit of the magic is gone, which is how I felt about Mercy in a big way when Mercy got the big rework. It felt like some of the magic, some of the, like, character fantasy is gone, which is funny because I think the ult is kind of cool. And I do like the new, like, mobile turrets. Like, the mobile turrets are the best part of the
Change. You can shoot out the turrets like a projectile, and there's only three of them, but they do more damage and slow you down more. So you can shoot them pretty far anywhere. Yeah.
They go
They're on a low cooldown, so you can just keep shooting. Like, yeah, they go infinite, yeah. So, yeah, like, so a lot of the ones, a lot of, like, interesting things, at least I was doing, is, like, I was putting them in places that Symmetra could never put them before, and so that throws people off, because they'll be walking, like, past their spawn, and then suddenly get hit by them all and get, like, roasted.
Yeah, which is, like, that's funny. That's
yeah,
so
that's
cool
old Symmetra. Like, ha, they got destroyed. I didn't have to do yeah. anything. My turrets killed them. Yeah.
And it's really good for, like, very fast-moving area denial, and that's how her ult also functions as well, is like really good area denial. Like, I thought it was a little bit lackluster at first, but I definitely saw, like, you, myself, and even and our other friend Hannah, who we play with, use some like really good strategic ults to basically like cut across an objective, which stops Bastions, which stops Pharahs and snipers, and, you know, like Hanzo. And while there's a lot of stuff that does go through the barrier because it's still just a shield, the fact that you can deny so much incoming long-range damage means, like, your Mercy can get a res off without worrying about the Widowmaker that's going to peek her. Or, like, you know, an onslaught of Zenyatta orbs, or a Pharah that's coming into ult, or a High Noon. Like we've yeah. seen some High Noons get blocked off by Symmetra ults, and that's great.
It's still not an ult that does a lot for... I still feel like it's not an ult that feels really, really powerful as the Symmetra, though.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, we didn't mention the other big thing, too, is that she's not a support anymore. She's a damage character.
She's a damage character.
Yeah, which is the new name for offense. Yeah.
Yeah, which is in the big row down at the
bottom. Yeah, they combine defense and offense to damage. So.
Yeah, which is like... Oh, whatever.
The only reason I say that her... I guess the thing is, like, her ult feels like a support ultimate, not a damage ultimate.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
That's the thing. Not that it's bad, but yeah.
Which is funny, because Bridget is definitely a support tank in a little way, in, like, kind of a way, but it's, you know, it is what it is, and...
Yeah, but, yeah, the teleporter, like, it's theoretically really cool, but there are games where I'd barely use it.
Same.
Yeah, and it's a 10-second cooldown, like, I don't know, to put it in perspective... Everyone has like two-ish abilities that they can use on like lower cooldowns, like 10 seconds, and you use those all the time.
All the time. Yeah. All the time.
All the time. Like if you don't use those, you're not playing your hero.
You're not playing your hero, right? Like Mercy, Guardian Angel, and fucking Rez all the fucking time.
And Rez is on a 30-second cooldown.
Yeah, Rez is 30 seconds.
I don't use Teleporter for like minutes sometimes.
Minutes, whole minutes. Because
there's no use for it.
There's no use. There's no, you can't. Use
I mean,
it.
You can like, put, so we were, I mean, we kind of jokingly, I mean, you can put it down and people can kill it. I guess we didn't say that either. And like, I guess you could put it down to distract people, but that's a boring use of.
That's stupid.
Yeah. It works though. I mean, I've done it. Like I've put it down and like a Reinhardt swings.
It only works
because
with the level we're playing at, it doesn't work at like at least with a like level one turret to distract people, that's still doing damage. Yeah. That's still ult charge. Whereas like people destroying your teleporter doesn't do anything for you at all.
She's like just like a she went from a character that had like narrow focus that had some issues with how maybe fun she was to play and her use, and like because the big thing is they wanted to make her better on attack because she's always been very much a defensive hero. But now that's like incredibly widened up her uses, but it's widened up so much that you don't really know what to do sometimes. I mean, there's definitely games where it's like she worked really well, but there are games too where it's like I guess I'm not very good in this situation. Like, I don't really know what to do. Like, theoretically, I could use my TP and we could get in there past this Orisa shield, but nobody's taking it, so otherwise I'm just shooting this shield. So should I get off Symmetra? Like, there's just, like, I don't know. It's just a weird... She's a weird character now. She's better. I don't think we can deny that she's better than she was before, but she's just, like... The design philosophy of making her good for like higher level like plays isn't necessarily good because it just doesn't happen in real games. And what it does is it leaves the character with like abilities that are really vague and don't have like immediate uses, but just have theoretical uses.
Yeah.
And that's not great design, I don't think, because it's not very rewarding to play. Because a lot of the heroes in the game feel really good to play because like, yes, some of the abilities will help your team, but they'll at least help you in that situation. But even TP, like you said, it takes a while to put down, and it has to be like in preparation. Like it rarely ever really helps you. So in that way, I don't think it's a great ability, which is weird because it sounds so cool. But
it does And then I also just don't like her left click either anymore.
Yeah, her beam is just like, sticky. It's really short range. And they said they're looking at that, but yeah.
Sticky noodle beam was so much better.
Having to aim, so that's another thing, is having to aim just so they could have it do more damage, because it does almost the same amount of damage as a full charge Zarya, which is a lot of, Zarya is like one of the highest DPS in the game when she's full charge, so that means Symmetra is now. The having to aim is
problematic.
It's problematic, yeah, because like,
It also makes her extremely vulnerable.
It makes her,
because they took away her shield.
Yeah, they took away her personal little shield she could shoot out in front of her.
Whereas, like, Zarya, the balance is the short beam that charges up. You get charged with the bubbles. It's so dynamic. It's so well designed. Whereas Symmetra, it's a short range beam, and if somebody is it takes a long time to charge up. And if somebody is that close to you, you are gonna fucking die.
Junkrat will hit you with two grenades and you're dead. Because they didn't give her more health.
Yeah, they didn't give her more health. She doesn't have a shield. She's not a tank. So, like, I actually almost never use her left click because it's just too dangerous.
You can only use it when nobody's paying attention to you, which is not a very common thing.
And they're
low
health. Yeah. And that's not very often.
She's not a flanker. Tracer and Genji, there's a lot of times where people are not paying attention to you, but it was Symmetra.
But they have movement abilities to compensate for that. And Teleporter is not a movement ability. Yeah. It is not. I'm sorry, it's not.
It's not.
it's not Dash. It's not Blink. It's not roll even.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a roll.
It's not even roll. Roll's not good. Yeah. So the McCree's roll, yeah.
So honestly, if I had to sum up my feelings about the Symmetra, I think it's better, but it's not there yet.
Yeah.
It's not there yet. And I'm scared because the iterative process did a number on Mercy. You know,
I'm scared because I don't think they're gonna iterate. I think they're calling it done.
They're done.
Yeah. Like, because I think it was Jeff Kaplan on that stream too. He was talking a lot about Symmetra, and a lot of his like sentiment towards it seemed just like, well, we designed it to sound really cool. There's that word again, and to have a lot of potential stuff that people could do with really cool plays, and we're good. Like that's it. Like we're done. Like we designed her. Like you could do really cool stuff, or you could not. So. You know, just play another hero, I guess. Like, and that's the thing is, like, because there's so many other options that might excuse them from making her very focused as a hero, because you could just switch to soldier. And I wonder if that's why they got rid of a lot of the intent with the hero designs lately. So I don't know. Symmetra. Symmetra's she's better. I agree with you. She's better, but I think she's just not. They're not there yet, I guess. But I don't know if they're going to go there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think that's all the time that we have for this week to talk about how mad we are at Overwatch and whatnot. But we did. I did want to suggest one thing that I thought people should watch before we go, which was I watched Hannah Gadsby's comedy special called Nanette, which is on Netflix right now. If you have, you know, US Netflix, I don't know if it's on Canadian or British or whatever yet, but I would strongly suggest you watch it. It's deeply moving. It's very intimate. It's super fucking funny, but it's also really like emotional. You'll be crying before the end. I did definitely. You should definitely check that out. I also finished up Luke Cage season 2, which is also really good. Also, we did do a call out that if you to write reviews on iTunes, and we actually got a couple. So if you do write a review and give us a rating, we'll read it on the show, as well as if you have any questions or comments about, you know, previous episodes, if you want to write in, we are makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. But we can read I'll read the iTunes review that we got this week. Well, we had two, but I'll read them real fast. We got a 5-star review from Thomas, who says, "Good cast. I've been following y'all's various output for some time and was quite excited to see you start a podcast. Good discussion, funny banter, and it's more progressive voices add to the world of games podcasting, a realm that needs those voices desperately. A good time all around."
Thanks, Thomas.
Yay, Thomas. We also got a 1-star review. I won't read their name out, but the title of the review is called "A Condescending Mess." Was looking for E3 analysis and whoa, stumbled on these hot takes. It being condescendingly lectured on the true meaning of Fallout by someone who admits to never playing one sounds fun. This pod is for you. Also, if you want a pod that will disingenuously misconstrue statements by well-liked figures so it can attack said people for things they never said, this pod is for you. In all seriousness, though, this pod does have pretty good Schadenfreude potential. If you get enjoyment out of people indignantly getting real upset at popular things for being popular, there is genuine enjoyment to be had here. It's real good.
Yeah. Should we change that to our podcast description?
Condescending Mess?
Yeah, that's a good name. I don't think Make It Sound Fiction was that good, yeah.
No, it's... Condescending Mess is a much better title. And it's very honest. So, I think we'll... Well, it's time to rebrand.
Three episodes in.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's better late than never,
I guess. Yeah, I guess start early. Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have any iTunes reviews that you want to send them, we will read them on the show, as well as questions and comments. And thank you. All of the cool, nice things that people have said on social media so far about our very nice podcast. So, Tyler, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at Tyler Culp, Tyler C-O-L-P. I'm also on YouTube, which is where we just finished L.A. Noire. I don't know if we finished that last time. No, we didn't. We just had like a, we talked yeah, about, we just yeah, had a, we, you and I finished yeah, streaming L.A. Noire, and it's all on my YouTube, which is just youtube.com/Tyler_Culp. And then also I'm on Twitch, which we stream, I stream every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that's twitch.com/OtterCrossPop. I'll say cross now instead of X, apparently.
I would say X because
it's the word, or because it's the letter.
It's a letter.
Yeah, it's word, Otter. Yeah. It's Otter X Pop. But yeah. Okay. So that's.
And you can find me Twitter, Apple Cider Witch, Twitch, Apple Cider Witch, and wherever fine Apple products are sold.
You're at my grocery store?
Yeah.
Okay.
All over. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at the new Twitter, MISFcast. If you want to follow us there,
if you did follow the first one, yeah, like we're not going to use that, so you can unfollow it safely and follow the new one. So
yeah, so and we will catch you next week.
Bye
bye.